That's my little Kramer right there. So my name is Kevin. I'm an alcoholic, and I like to have fun. So first off, I want to say how amazing it is that I'm here today. There we go. Because every time I get to stand up here, I kind of reflect on what my life was like when I was going through these treatment centers, and if they knew that I was actually standing behind a mic today, they would be blown away. And I don't know if maybe the worst people sometimes get this program because, you know, they've got a little bit more willingness, but that was certainly my case. I've been kicked out of every single rehab I've ever been to. Selfishness and self-centeredness drove me like drugs and alcohol drove me. If when you take that away from me, I'll do anything. I will do anything to get my drugs and alcohol. If I need to get out of treatment to do that, it's real easy. Threaten I'm going to get a knife and, you know, start stabbing people to whatever if they make me go to one more AA meeting. I've hated AA. If you're at that point, I've been there where AA was not going to be my solution. Drugs and alcohol were going to be my solution, and that's how I was going to live life. So it's truly a blessing. There's something happened in my life. They talk about a psychic change. There's something that's happened to me to where I'm behind this mic right this second. And I hopefully I can share the experience of when I thought maybe I could get sober, maybe I could just like drink less, or maybe I could, you know, I can't get sober. I definitely can't sponsor people. I definitely can't help anybody. That's just not for me. And that's not been the case for me. I guess to start my story out, I was raised here in Austin, Texas. I was literally raised in a perfect family, no trauma. I got everything I want. I had the most love in the world from my parents, mother and father. They're still my best friends today. I don't know why they would even talk to me after what I've done. But we have a wonderful relationship. I've been sober since July 3rd of 2010. And I actually saw on my little app yesterday, today's the 4th or the 5th, whatever the 3rd was, I was sober for 100 months. So that's crazy, man. That's crazy. Give me a little bit of it. So that's incredible. I've been through surgeries. I've been through two knee surgeries without drugs and alcohol. And I'm not saying for you to do that. I'm just saying I got connected to a power when I asked him to not give me pain because I didn't want to take drugs and alcohol. He gave me no pain through those surgeries. So anything is possible once you get connected to this higher power. Like I said, I grew up here in Austin, Texas. Somehow I was friends with the popular kids, so that in turn made me popular, walking around unconscious to the world around me. I don't think I was that cool of a person. I just lucked out and was popular in high school. My love in life was basketball. Not to brag, but my first dunk was in the 8th grade. That's crazy. We can get an applause for that. No. So that's like in my head. I could dunk when I, you know, nobody cares. Anyways, so that was my love. That was my love of life, basketball. Basketball kept me sober. It kept me doing something through my early years, through my high school years. I did get in trouble one time, and I probably seen this as a problem. The first time I drank alcohol, I was in a sophomore in high school, and we had Bacardi 151. And I remember just pouring big cups of it and drinking it in big cups. And we went to our football game, and I ended up passing out, you know, alcohol poisoning, hospital. This is my first time to drink alcohol, and little did I know that, you know, everybody else, you know, just drank and thought, you know, that's tough. And I'm sitting there drinking it like water. And I don't know, I can't remember if the craving had overcome me that night. But something came over me to where I needed to drink all of it in that whole bottle. That was my first real punishment. Since I was at a football game, I was expelled from the basketball team. And that was a real shock, going, God, alcohol took away my love in life is to play basketball season, is to play basketball for my high school. And, lost my train of thought. Basketball. What was I saying? Yeah, alcohol took away basketball. And so I remember going to these next parties and going, hey, I'm not going to drink at these parties. And I stood zero chance if I really got down to it. But I was alcohol took away basketball. I'm not drinking. And I remember I couldn't go to one party until, you know, I was back drunk again. I probably managed it a little bit better. You know, I had a lot of stuff keeping me busy and I made it through high school. I got to play my senior year. College started. I was at home for the first semester of college, and I got through that well. It's almost like I needed a bodyguard around me, you know, or live with my parents or something, because I needed some kind of structure in my life. Second semester, I moved out with my brother, and it was about 2 months living there that I realized, like, whoa, I'm an alcoholic. I've lived with my brother 60 days, and there's not one day that I haven't just got completely drunk. And it wasn't about another, you know, when the shit hits the fan, what do we call those? Maybe a step one experience or so. It was about 3 months into that thing and until, you know, the shit hit the fan. My dad was yelling at me. My brother was yelling at me. I'd like put all these holes in the wall. If y'all can relate, anybody putting holes in the wall, I walk through walls. And I remember I was taking Adderall. I don't know if I mentioned I'm a drug addict too. I'll do anything. You take that away, I'm sniffing gas in the garage, and I'm serious. So yeah, whatever it is. I had all this pressure on me. I've been loved my whole life, and I've done good. I've done pretty good my whole life. And it was that first thought of people being disappointed in me. I just took that whole bottle of Adderall and took it. And little did you know that I don't think that can kill you. It just makes you sit in the hospital bed, you know, wanting anything to do, a coloring book, you know. I don't know what, I was like, Mom, go get my beat machine at home. I was making music at the time. They're like, absolutely not, you know. And it's funny because I'll have it later on in my story where I'm about to kill myself and then I take a lot of drugs and I'm the happiest person in the world again. And so that kind of shows me that drugs and alcohol, this is it for me. I don't like my internal condition, and drugs and alcohol fix that. So I went to my first treatment center at about 23. Anybody been to multiple treatment centers? Yeah, I've got a couple more. I think I stayed about 18 days. They were saying, we can't help you. We're going to send you to a long-term treatment center. And it was just basically reasons for selfish and self-centered. I did whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted. They told me to go to class. I didn't want to do that. I did whatever I wanted to do. I went to a treatment center for about 6 months. When I was 23, and it was bad. They would take us all to the grocery store, and we'd just steal all the vanilla extract. And I learned that peppermint extract was actually stronger than all of that. It was like Everclear. So I would sit around coughing up stuff throughout that treatment center from drinking that. Not really getting. I think the seed was planted that maybe AA was kind of what's going to mess up my drinking. That would be That was what I was going to live. I remember calling my mom and going, "Hey, Mom, I've got it down." She was excited, and I told her I was just going to drink Patron and Grey Goose because those are expensive, and I couldn't afford a lot of those. So that's how I was going to manage my alcohol, and I'm sure we have a million different ways of doing that. I come home, and it goes into a vicious cycle of I'm partying every night to I'm just taking drugs to where I'm not talking to anybody. I'm just at my house taking drugs. They asked me in treatment center, "What is your trigger?" And I told them my trigger was waking up in the morning. I told them and I'm being honest, if I'm awake, I went about 10 years with being on drugs or alcohol. If I'm out of bed and walking in public, I have some kind of amphetamine or some kind of vodka. I don't care if I'm in a sober house, or I don't care, you know, I don't care where I'm at. I don't care if I'm in, you know, as long as I'm not in treatment. And the only time that I wasn't, I really, really got to see this irritable, restless, and discontent set up. I was at a friend's house, and I'd ran out of money, and he was like a drug addict, too. So he's lazy, and he didn't want to take me home. And so I'm stuck over there for about 4 days with no money and no drugs and no alcohol, and I'm ready to fight people. And I'm the nicest guy in the world, you know. And I'm unselfish. I'll buy you beer if I have if I have enough money. But that was the first time to really see, and not noticing, because I haven't been in a program, that irritable, restless, and discontent sets in. I need drugs and alcohol to be happy. There's the craziest stories. My mom was my life, and you know, it got to the point where she's hiding in bathrooms and I'm chopping down the door with an axe because I know she has my Adderall, and it you know, she might have five Adderall, and I'm just at that point where the drugs and alcohol have got complete control over me, and I really don't stand any chance at being a good person unless I have those things. From then on, my life really consists of psych wards. Anybody can relate to psych wards? You go into the psych ward the first time, and you're kind of like, "I'm not like these people, Dad. Please take me home. I'm not like these people at all." And then the second time you go, and you're seeing the dudes like walk back and forth, and you're like, I'm not like these people. Maybe I can help them though. So I'll come in. And then the third time you're like, "Oh, hell, I'm home. What's up, guys?" You know? And so that's the type of life that I lived, where I felt comfortable in these psych wards, doing whatever I wanted to do, and just basically causing havoc. I was a big Eminem fan, and he would rap about like turning everything upside down that wasn't tied down. So I would just go through all the, you know, psych wards and just turn everything, you know, upside down, and they'd be like, they'd come out with the Thorazine. I'm like, "Okay, I'm good," you know. So, treatment centers, like I said, treatment centers, jails. You know, you put me in the jail, I'm punching everything until my knuckles are bloody. I'm taking my clothes off the first thing. And, oh, I forgot to mention, when I got sober, I was about 300 pounds, and I didn't have any teeth. So my life has completely changed in every single way. I wish I had a big picture that we could boom, boom, like show, like the wee thing. I got a couple good ones. But it was a bloated, very, you know, alcoholic face, no soul. You can really tell that there's no soul in my face. So what's up? Oh, she's so great. So I guess, you know, to talk about my first steps, I've had a lot of first step experiences, like you've seen. Out of each treatment center, I had a firm resolution. Well, I wouldn't say firm resolution. I had a resolution that stopping drinking was a good idea. And I was willing to do some stuff. I don't know if, you know, you remember your first time and you kind of, I went to meetings. AA didn't work for me. And then, you know, you kind of have that spiel where you go 2 months and shit hits the fan, and you stay sober for a little bit, and then you don't stay sober because it gets so bad. And that's that cycle that I just lived in, that where, you know, you stay sober and And then it gets so bad that I just got to get drunk, and then it gets so bad that I got to get sober. And it wasn't until that point that I realized I will live that for the rest of my life. And it took a long time for me to really go to all these treatment centers and realize that. If I told you the reasons I've got kicked out of these treatment centers, it's kind of funny, but it's really not. It was disrespectful. You know, I want to thank y'all because, I mean, even at my last treatment center, I think I called one of the guys a pussy that came in and talked to us, you know, because I'm just... That's my internal condition, and I'm telling you, my life has changed 100 billion percent. Sometimes you'll see me, just kind of standing there, and if I ever do this, I'm like, oh God, it's because I'm thinking about what I used to do, you know, just blatant idiot. I'm just an idiot, and that was a good realization that I had to come to. She's my little helper. I think the only other thing I mentioned throughout these, you know, I get to that point where I'm broken down, that I know I can't drink anymore, and I know I can't stay sober. I'm not a depressed person. I just get to that point where killing myself is the only option. And I have about four suicide attempts under my belt, about two or three really, really serious ones. Where I was in comas for a while, and none of my comas were over drug overdoses. It was all because I got to that point where going, God, I just can't do this anymore. And so it tells me that there's something wrong with the internal condition, the way I feel. If I wake up and want to use and drink, you know, drugs and alcohol, there's something that's not the problem. Under my last treatment center, I came to the idea that. It was the first one we kind of left mutual ways. They were like, yeah, you can go. And I was telling them, I'm just going to do AA, and it's going to fix everything. And I really meant that, you know. I really meant that I was going to get out of there, and I was going to go work the steps. So I went to a sober house. I don't know if this sober house is still around, but they didn't require you to go to AA meetings. And that was my bread and butter. That's how I was going to stay sober. I did have a firm resolution. I thought about it. It was the first treatment center that I went to. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to keep taking Vyvanse because it's a new Adderall. And I was like, oh, it's Adderall? I had no idea. You know, it's like, can I just stay on that? You know, and that was one of the first traumatic experiences when I went there. And they were like, you're going to have to get off of it. And I'm like, I've got ADD. And I really do have a really bad case of ADD. My mind wanders. And she just said, well, it's going to be a little bit harder for you than everybody else. And for some reason, I accepted that as a plan of treatment, and I poured them down the toilet, and that's what I tell people is my only traumatic experience. Not to be funny, but I was traumatized when I did that, and I was like, oh my God, why would I do that? You know, why didn't I just take them and swallow all of them? And I slept for about 7 days, I was still in selfish mode. I'd get up and we'd be in a detox and I'd just go around and I'd eat everybody's food and then go back to bed. And they're like, that guy ate all everybody's food, you know, and there's like no more. But I'm going to get fixed from AA. So I get out of this place and nobody goes to AA meetings. I think I went to one in the first week, and I know there's no excuse, but they're really, I've got an internal condition that's really hard to deal with, and I can't just, you know, make stuff happen. I need to be pulled in, you know, for the first week or so. And it took me about 7 days. It took me about 4 days until I was just taking my Seroquel to sleep off the day, because I hated, it was just, the days were the worst, until I just took a drink of alcohol. And under that, it came to that another hard place, because right before that I had cut this big old hole in my parents' house and I stole their guns and money, and I was going to off myself, and that's when the drugs and alcohol saved my life, because I had all these drugs and I just took them and I wasn't depressed anymore. And so I knew that that was the last straw. I had done too many things. And where was I again? It's like a really bad ADD. What was it?
Oh,
Yeah. And then so I, God, we do this like when we're like hanging out. I'm like, where was I? Yeah. So it's because I'm nervous. Being real with you. So like I said, that was my last straw. I took 100 Tylenol PM and went into a coma. And luckily, my life was saved. And I came out, and there it was. I had lost every single idea I had. You asked me if I like mayonnaise or mustard on my sandwich. I said, I have no clue. I'm an idiot. And I was serious. I don't know anything. I'm ready to relearn everything over again. And I pulled the things out of my arm. I didn't pull that one. I'd been in enough of these. I pulled those out, and I was fighting. I was going to walk to an AA meeting straight out of the hospital bed. And I went to I got into a sober house. They went to two meetings a day. It was the sickest house, and I stayed in there for 9 months. Worked my steps around it, and they took me to two meetings a day for probably 7-8 months. And so when they told me 90 and 90, I said, hey, I'm going to kill that. I probably did, I don't know, 150 and 90. Because that was the desperation that I had found from being so stubborn so many different times that I was ready to lose every single thought that I had. I went to a meeting, and they had one person sponsoring in that meeting, and that guy was going to be my sponsor. I annoyed him. I banged his door down to work these steps. I wasn't waiting for him to call me. This was going to save my life. This was the time that I pictured like I would be in jail, and I'd be sitting there and going, man, if I just had one more time, this was my one chance to get sober and live a normal life. So I started working the steps with him. He ended up trying to, like, he would always like borrow money from me and never pay me back. So I got a different sponsor. So if you come and you have a bad experience, though, it's AA is not one person. AA is not one meeting. AA, you know, for me, I go to AA. Or Narcotics Anonymous is not one meeting, not one person. It's, you have to have the experience. You can have an experience in there. So I kind of roamed around, jumping from sponsor to sponsor. I worked the 12 steps with one guy, and then, you know, it didn't really have I didn't have like a psychic change like they talked about. And then I found this guy, and I don't know, do we have any big sports fans in here? I'm like the biggest sports fan. I'm not missing sports for no meeting, I'll tell you that. So this guy, he comes to my sober house, and he comes every Sunday, and nobody's listening to him except me. I'm the only one, and I feel like I'm like, this. Everybody's disrespecting. Get off your phones. Wake up. And he was the biggest Eagles fan in the world. And this was when the Eagles were in the Super Bowl. And the week before, he had missed the conference finals to come to our house, the conference, whatever they call it in football. And then he came when they were in the Super Bowl, and he missed the Super Bowl. And this guy, hardcore Eagles, it's his life. And I had to just pull him aside and go, man, what are you doing? You're missing the Eagles to come to this place that nobody's listening to you. And I mean, what are you doing? And that's when he broke it down to me that his thing is to carry this message. Somebody brought him this message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he got sober. And I knew he had told me a story. He was a homeless guy sitting under, you know, drinking under a bridge. And now he had a girlfriend. And you know, they had a healthy relationship. They had a real good marriage. Nobody got that. it's an Eminem thing. And I said, man, that's what I want. That's the type of recovery I want. That's what putting this thing first is going to look like when they talk about that. Cause when you say put it first, I'm a delusional person still. And I say, well, I'm still watching my basketball games, even though that my home group's going on that night. And so that's where I learned. I said, man, this guy's got what I want. And when you see somebody that really, they have something that you want, you go attack them. And that's what I did with this guy. I don't think he was sponsoring at the time. I made him sponsor me. And I think I was the first guy that he had walked fully through the steps. He got me hooked up with some really amazing meetings in Austin, Texas, which I still go to this day. It's still my home group, and I've had a crazy experience through this whole thing. I remember in that first sober living house, we'd have a lot of people come in, and my first question, you know, getting newly sober, was when do I feel normal again? Like, I've got so much anxiety, I've got so much fear. You know, I'm basically just I'm stacking up days, and that was my motivation, right? I think that kept me sober at, you know, 3 months. I had a chance to use, and I was like, oh, 3 months, I'll never get that again. And so luckily that kept me sober for a little bit. My answer was to get uncomfortable, to go to the places that make me uncomfortable. There's a meeting. I guess we can say meeting names. Okay, there's a meeting called 1313, and I felt like that was where all the cool people went. And I wanted to be cool because I was cool once. but I wanted a good life for myself. And I would go to that meeting, and I had so much anxiety when they after the prayer, I'm just zooming right out the door. And then I'd go and pray and say, God, you know, remove some anxiety. Let me say what's up to somebody. Let me give a head nod. And it literally went that slow. And I'd give a head nod and, okay, see y'all. And then it was like, let me talk to somebody. And just the shallowest conversation, just let me do anything. Hey, how's Kevin? Yeah. Then I got tired of shallow conversation. I wanted to really hang out with someone. I wanted to maybe go out, you know, to dinner with them afterwards. And that's basically how I overcame that. And that's what I've learned for my recovery is I can't sit in comfortable, or I just can't sit in it. And that's been the driving force of me to grow spiritually, to get better at everything I've done. If I were to write a list about what I wanted my sobriety to look like when I came in. Like I said, I was 300 pounds, didn't have any teeth, didn't have any social skills, really. I mean, I drank myself to no human being. My what? Oh, what list? Oh, there we go. So this is just a thing we do to be more entertaining. If I were to write a list, I would want to just sit in a smoggy room with some old guys, and I'd probably pick the habit of dipping up, and we could just spit in a cup and talk about the good old days or whatever it was. Like, I didn't care what it was. I just didn't want to drink and use. I would have taken whatever recovery was possible. I don't care if I had to white knuckle it. You know, whatever it was, I just knew I never wanted to use again. And that, I would have sold myself so short, not knowing that through this program, if you really get connected, if you really do the 12 steps, where are they? Right behind me. If you really do this and have an experience with it, you have no clue what you're going to turn into. It talks about running off inspiration on page 87 or so, where God will inspire me. That's not what I was running on back in the day. I used drugs and alcohol to get my inspiration. And today, whatever's lacking in my life, I use drugs and I use God exactly like I use drugs and alcohol. I was really nervous coming in here, and I just went, oh, I got to go to the bathroom. God, what are you doing to me? I really was comforted by the people that I talked to before the meeting. And I know that he's going to do it every single time. I know that the power of God will be there. Like I said, I've been through surgeries. I mean, I'm talking eight and 100 months without one drop of alcohol, one drug. I'm actually a bartender, and I got into bartending sober just because I like talking to people. And that's basically what I wanted to do, is just talk to people. And I had a beer yesterday, or like 3 days ago. I dropped it. And it got a hole in it, and I picked it up, and it just sprayed right into my mouth. And So that was the only time. But I was like, did anybody see that? That was crazy. That's the only alcohol that's been in my mouth. It was literally 3 days ago. So, but my hope is to say that I'm not sitting around. I promise you, I'm not sitting around white knuckling it. I promise you, I'm not going around, wishing that my life was better. I've come to accept everything. Pain is my greatest thing. I was, I actually wanted pain early in recovery because I started to see how I could grow from it, you know. And I have this saying where I start talking about how I love everything. I love traffic, and I love all these things that people hate, because that's when I started to get some relief and really calm the mind down. And you're just in traffic, you know. Say hi to the person next to you or whatever. So. My life will always be anchored to Alcoholics Anonymous, or, you know, in the 12 steps in God. And the AA program is easy. Well, it's not easy, but my mind, it makes noises, right? And if I can wake up in the morning and not think about the gym, not think about what I'm going to wear, not think about how much money I'm going to make at work, not think about, you know, what foods I'm going to eat so I can look better. And if my first thoughts are on how can I help another alcoholic, how can I do God's will, and how can I keep close to him, if I can really just think about those things, everything else gets taken care of. It's kind of like being on get him to the Greek, that guy. Talks about when he's on the drug, you know, when he's on heroin. He's like, "Why are you on heroin?" He's like, "Well, I don't have to worry about anything. There's no worries in the world," and that's kind of like what it is when I'm really doing this thing. When I'm on the beam, and I just show up to places and things happen. You know, you can really get connected. God will start talking to you, and he'll start telling you to go to these weird places, and then you'll see why you went to that weird place. Which I think is the most amazing thing I have a power that I consider it cheating at life. I do consider this cheating at life. And when I tell people that, you know, I don't know if they understand what I'm saying, but, you know, I see how normal people react to some situations, and I sometimes will do that just lackadaisical, and I'm still, you know, way ahead of them. I'm not saying I'm better than them, because they're probably a lot less selfish than me, but, so my life is amazing today. Like I said, I didn't have a girlfriend since I was in high school, and I was 28 when I got sober. I was 30 when I met my lovely wife. I still didn't have a girlfriend. I think like any sober boy, I chased women like crazy. I chased, working out like crazy. I did everything unhealthy that I hopefully not everybody has to go through. But for me, I had to go through that. And it's funny that this young one saw it. You know, she saw all of that. And for some reason, I always talk about the hand that God played in, you know, forming my life today. Was for some reason I wasn't like that to her. And I promise it's nothing to do with me. I think the hand of God was really there when I bought the place. I think the hand of God was there when he made me act a certain way out of respect. It was the first time that a girl was my friend. Like, and I was truly just, I wanted the best for her, you know. And I think that's kind of how an awesome relationship works. I don't think I'm going around going, I'm going to make something work. I'm going to get me a boyfriend. I'm going to get me a girlfriend. You know, that's... It seems like that's how it works, right? But it's definitely not. I have to be natural. I have to bring God into every single thing that I do. Yeah. And how much time do we got? We got about 7 minutes left. And the things we've done today is, like I said, is near a miracle. We've traveled the world. I've had a career. I've worked. Each thing that I've done, I've grown. I worked as a mover right at the beginning, getting sober. Then I wanted to talk to more people, so I worked at a grocery store, Trader Joe's, which is an amazing place to work. Great benefits, great pay, and I really learned. You know, enough people were telling me they wanted to tip me every day. So I was like, well, I'm just going to go be a server. So I became a server, and then, you know, I want to make more money. So I became a bartender, and I really do love what I do. And now I'm actually going to, my next step is I want to make more money. So I'm going to be a real estate agent. Me and my wife are both going to do that. And I'm telling you, I can't get through college. I've tried to go through college, of course, a couple times while I was drinking. I tried to go back to college while I'm sober, and I have a mind that once they start talking, my mind just goes, and I just can't listen. And so my wife is helping me, but I'm keeping God with me this time. And you know, when it gets uncomfortable, I stay there, and not like I did the other times. So to say that I could just come in and get sober and walk off and be fine is just as false as things get. I have to be as willing as I was from that one day when I'm talking desperation of a drowning man. You hear that story about the guy that wants to succeed, so he goes and meets the guy out in the ocean, and he tries to drown him, and he's like, what the hell are you doing? He's like, that when you want to breathe, when you want to succeed as much as you want to breathe, that's when you'll succeed. And so I have to look at my recovery like that. I have to go, oh, yeah, I'll speak at that thing, you know. Oh, what if I'm not in a good place? You know, God will make me in a good place. And, you know, sponsoring guys, I can either sponsor guys without God, or I can sponsor guys with God. And it's a lot easier with God, because without him, I'm just walking around going, hey, yeah, you do, yeah, you know. To really sit eye to eye with a man and show him something that's been given to me so freely is just, it's unbelievable. Today, I'm just grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to be sober. I have no toxic relationships. All of my relationships are healthy. I love my wife so much, and I love life so much. I love my nephew and niece. It's a far fetch from when my brother told me I could never see them again. You know, it was these things just over and over. And I'm sure y'all all can kind of relate, because I've talked to y'all. Y'all are crazy. We're crazy. And you know, it's funny that I think that my story's unique until I talk to somebody and be like, oh, you're exactly like me. You know, so. I guess with that, I'll close, or I'll just start rambling. Yeah. Thank you.